Welcome to the No Shot Clock Podcast. We are rolling out episode number 19 here, and I am Joe Hendrickson. With me, as always, is Michael O'Brien of the Chicago Sun-Times. The season, the regular season, or the whole season, is in the books. But we're going to wrap up a little bit of talk here and take a sneak peek at next season. And as we always do, we're going to answer a few of your questions that you've submitted.
All right, guys. Yeah, let's start things out with looking ahead to next year. It's kind of interesting. Number one is going to be wide open for me. I might have to attend some more summer and spring games than I usually do, actually. Not my favorite stuff. Some of the camp stuff in June is all right. But I think we definitely have a top tier of teams that we can kind of talk over a little bit and consider. To start it off, it's going to be the two Red South powers, as always, are really good. You know, Morgan Park returns Charlie Moore, one of the best players from last year. Jaron Randall, who hit 10 threes in that third place game. Then they've got Alonzo Chapman, who improved a ton this year, you know, a big guy, and two other bigs who really crashed the boards well, Jamal Burton and Melo Burrell. So I think that team, and then with Simeon, you know most of these names, Zach Norvell, Evan Gilliard, Kizo Brown, Josh Thomas is back. Expect him to have a big year. And they've got a bunch of reinforcements coming up from the sophomore team. So those two are top notch. Then you got to look at Curry and Young and Kenwood, kind of the other three public league teams that bring a lot back.
I just look at it, Mike, and I see, and I agree, Simeon and Morgan Park again. Obviously, they fell short of state championship goals this season, and a lot of people thought they could. But you talk about that personnel, and you look at those particular teams as being potential number one teams, and they aren't anywhere near what their teams have been in recent years. I mean, you look at some of the talent that's come through both Morgan Park and Simeon over the last few years. Obviously, Morgan Park had led to two state titles and a third place finish, and then Simeon obviously had that run of four straight state titles, and then last year hiccup, and then this year the stunner and the super sectional. But regardless of all that, just the personnel talent-wise does not match up to what we've seen coming out of those two programs. And I think that's going to be kind of the case across the board as we look ahead to next year.
Yeah, the kind of the other top tier here, I guess the rest of the top tier, Fenwick brings pretty much everybody back that mattered. You know, with Mike Smith, Mike Ballard, and Jamal Nixon coming off an injury, issue with them is going to be depth. You know, Rick Malnati needs to find some role players. He needed that this year, and I don't know how that stands. If he can do that, that team's going to be very, very good.
It's very good, and they got the guard play, which we always talk about. Mike Smith, the point guard, he's already a three-year veteran. Ballard was huge the second half of the season. He's going to be one of the he's a scholarship kid, and in one way or another, terrific shooter. And obviously Nixon got hurt late in the season, promising prospect in the sophomore class. And another sophomore who got a ton of time, Jacob Keller, who, you know, had a terrific season under the radar, but hard-nosed 6'1", off the ball, two-guard wing, who's pretty physical, plays hard, promising kid. So there's four really good pieces there for Coach Rick Malnati.
And then you got Kenwood, which is going to, you know, Zion Morgan and Nick Robinson, who played all year. And then they've got a big piece coming back in Manny Patterson, who's going to be one of the better big men in the whole area and definitely in the city. It's interesting, though, because their issue kind of looks like the same thing it was this year. Point guard.
Yeah, and you don't have that point guard spot. It's glaring, unless you're Geneva. I don't know. If you look at the whole landscape of high school basketball, you rely on that point guard position so much, and when you have a question, I mean, a lot of these things are going to be solved in the offseason. There's guys that we don't even know that are coming through. They might not be college prospects, but could be really good high school role players that step forward and make a name for themselves. Every year, I know I look at, you know, I watch the Riverside Brookfield shootout at the end of May, early June. And every year I come out away with a half a dozen or 12 players that I really didn't know much about, and I come out and I got their names written down as guys that are really going to have key roles or really rise to the occasion at the varsity level in the coming season.
You know, then you got Evanston. We know Nojel Eastern, Jerome Bynum, tons of sophomores who played for them. They're not going to miss a beat. They're going to be back. Same thing going on over down in Bradley Bourbonnais with Mike Bradford and Zach Hollywood. You know, both those teams are going to have superstars. So that's going to be just a huge boost to them, and they should be definitely, you know, among the top 10.
Evanston loses some size and going to have to replace that some way. They're not real big. But, yeah, I've always kept talking about that sophomore group. Obviously, Nojel Eastern is a type of player that can carry a team at the high school level. And then Micah Bradford is a big-time scoring point guard who is going to have a big offseason here, I think, among with college coaches as he plays out the AAU schedule here in the spring and summer. So, yeah, Bradley Bourbonnais should be one of the top teams in the South Suburbs and a likely potential top 10 team.
Another public league team to watch, Bogan. Bryce Barnes and James Jones are back, and possibly a lot of smoke around Bogan right now that they could get a transfer that would mean a lot. And, you know, Arthur Goodwin's pretty good at reloading with that program, so they'll be tough. Also, we still haven't mentioned St. Joe's. LaVon Thomas is back in the big boy. You know, Nick Rakicevich is back, so that's going to help a lot. They've also got a lot of nice underclassmen pieces. Joe should be really good.
Yeah, they do have a lot of young pieces that weren't even in the varsity mix. So that's going to be, you know, probably a top two, top three team in the Chicago Catholic League. And, you know, when you've got a guy that size, but you look at that team, they got some key pieces to replace in Glenn Watson and Jordan Nash. And, you know, those are two high-level guards that are hard to replace when you look at, you know, trying to figure out how you're going to do that next year, especially Watts at the point guard position.
No doubt. And this one is one of the more interesting ones to me, Marion Catholic. The two freshmen, Chase Adams and Brandon Hurt, were really good this year. They're back. Their best player, TJ Smith, is going to miss the whole year with an injury, so he's going to be back. And they got 6'7" Miles Howard, some other guys who played real well, so that's going to be a team maybe that started to come together in the playoffs and showed us what next year could be like.
Yeah, they did, you know, and TJ Smith was, I was really excited to see his progress and development until he did blow his ACL out. I talked to Coach Taylor down, Marion Catholic Coach Taylor down at Peoria last weekend. We were just kind of talking about that, and he was back at the last week or two, I think, the last few weeks, back on the floor, practicing a little bit, but just wasn't ready to go for where they were, you know, as a team. It was no reason to risk anything with him. So he should be good to go, clear to go this spring. And I think, you know, just people that saw him last year, he was a big part of their team last year as a young kid, that Tyler Euless team that reached the super sectional. But he's 6'6", pushing 6'7", really versatile. And I thought he was ready, poised to really blossom this season prior to that season-ending knee injury.
And then just finally, a couple schools I wanted to run the names by. Obviously, if Alonzo Verge remains at Willowbrook, there's a lot of talk about that. They're going to be very good. Larkin with Christian Negron. Lincoln Way West has pretty much everybody back from a team that was really solid, and they might actually deserve to be with the group we just went through. Leo returns a lot. You know, I think they had a disappointing year. I think they thought they were going to be a little bit better than they were, but they return a lot, especially in the backcourt. Westinghouse has, you know, star freshman Io DeSunmu. They're going to be good. St. Ignatius, if you take a look at their roster and who played for them, you know, so much talk about Riley Duty, and that's a huge hole to replace, but a lot of their best talent is back. That's going to be a really solid team with, you know, with Rich Kehoe. And last but certainly not least, Joliet West. Three starters, pretty good back. Trevian Bell, the big guy. Tevian Kirk, a guard. And Jerron Neighbors, who's kind of a do-it-all player that I really liked. He's a strong guy, can do a lot of different things. And they had an excellent sophomore team with a bunch of freshmen. So I'm hoping that the Joliet area perks up a little bit.
Yeah, that group of teams you just mentioned, I really like Lincoln Way West. I just like how they came together this year with underclassmen as the anchor. So I think they really grew up as a program, as a team. They got a little of attention this year and responded to it. They reached a sectional semifinal or sectional final, in 3A. So I think that team is one to watch of that group you just mentioned.
Also, I've heard a lot of good things about, I'm going to throw in Downers North. They've got some talent there now, but I've heard that they're, someone I know big high school basketball fan who goes to games every night and always watches both games, the sophomore and the varsity, said that the Downers North sophomore team was the best he's seen in a couple of years. Not just this year. They were that good. So I know absolutely nothing about them, but look out. All right, let's move on to that's our quick preview of next year. We can get into that more in future podcasts. But we've got a bunch of questions to hit that we didn't get around to last time. So we're going to try and get through all those now. This first one here is from Ronell Chapman. He says, love the show. I'm so used to seeing Bolingbrook's girls basketball team reach state and having tremendous success for the last decade. As big as that school is, I was surprised and joyful that the boys basketball program finally got over the hump and made a run for third place at state this year. Do you think the lack of coaching or talent has been the problem from not having a strong program? And what do you think the success of this year will do for their program?
I think the success of a program, it really translates to younger classes. It's also a program that's very, there's been movable parts in and out of Bolingbrook. It's not as if a lot of these kids have been living there forever. I can't say that for every single kid in the program right now, but there's a lot of influx of talents coming in and out of there and even left there. I mean, you talk about Jordan Nash, St. Joe's. You know, if he were to have gone to high school, he would have been at Bolingbrook. It is a program that, you know, I've been writing about just this week and something I'm putting together as a program that's kind of been picked on a little bit. they've been one that has taken some heat for falling short here and there, whether it be a conference race or, you know, a regional upset, whatever it might be. And it really kind of quieted critics this year with this run. They were 6-5, and from that point on, they really put together a terrific second half of the season, and they finished third in the state. So I think that's going to really, really kind of bring that program together in terms of the lower levels and what it is possible at Bolingbrook, which everybody's always thought because there's been a lot of talent in those hallways at Bolingbrook.
Yeah, pretty much agree with everything Joe just said. And, I mean, frankly, Rob Brost was in trouble. He was in big, big trouble headed into this season. There was a lot of pressure on him. He had to win, and he did win. So I think that's really important. And even if you want to nitpick about the path that it wasn't the toughest, that ended when they demolished Geneva. I mean, that all you needed to do, Rob Brost did it, and it's going to really, really, I think, take off for Bolingbrook. That's going to just kind of make it more of a basketball school. You know, for a lot of us, we still thought of it not just as a girls basketball school, but there was a pretty good football school.
Football, yeah.
When I was around. So yeah, it's going to be a big year for Bolingbrook and for Rob Brost, who will rest easy, I think, for the next few years. Let's move on to the next question here. One second. This is from Adam Hoover. Adam is the Clemente basketball coach. Had a good player this year, and I kept threatening to go over there and see a game. It's my neighborhood high school, but I never actually managed it. Feel bad about that. Sorry, Adam. But here's his question. It's an interesting one. Michael, I always love end-of-the-year award shows for the NBA, NCAA, etc. If you had to choose for the state of Illinois or city of Chicago, however you want to break it down, who would win the MVP, most improved player, sixth man, freshman, and coach of the year? Let's start it up here. MVP. I went with, I mean, obviously I could sit here and say Jalen Brunson or something, and I think that'd be boring. So to me, MVP year, I'm looking back at the whole season, and St. Joe's brought home a state title, and I think they don't do it without the way Jordan Nash played. And watching him at the press conference with his teammates and with Coach Pingator, it became really clear that Jordan Nash was the glue that held that whole thing together. You know, he was, I think, the bridge in a lot of ways between the players and the coaching staff. I think he kept a lot of the players from destroying each other completely. And he's a super talented guy with a D1 scholarship that accepted a role of not scoring a lot. And instead, he rebounded the ball. You know, he assisted the ball. He did everything you needed to win. And in the end, he got a state title for it. And so I'm going Jordan Nash is my MVP.
My MVP, I mean, I still go Jalen Brunson, but stay away from the boring part of the Jalen Brunson love fest, which has been going on all year long. And I'm going to stay in that league, though. Evan Boudreau of Lake Forest, I mean, Lake Forest lost three games all year long. I know they didn't play the greatest schedule, but when you look at overall productivity, really not just this year, and I know this is not a career award that I'm talking about, but Evan Bouguereau, the course of his career, from rebounding, point totals, they're staggering. They really are. And you take Evan Bouguereau off of that team, I don't know how, you know, I mean, Lake Forest is probably a 15-win team, 16-win team. And so for that reason, Evan Bouguereau is my MVP for what they did, which is beat every single team they played all season long. They won two tournaments, Thanksgiving and Christmas, with Evan Bouguereau leading the way. So Evan Bouguereau, man, what a career he had.
No doubt. All right, next up, most improved. To me, this was easy. Came right to my mind. Charlie Moore from Morgan Park. It helps when you grow like 5 or 6 inches. And he really was able to use that in so many ways. He was tough to stop when he was going to the basket. He's able to shoot it. I think he had a fabulous year there, kind of the Batman and Robin thing with Marcus Levett Jr. Fell a little short at the end. Couldn't get over that Belleville Altoff hump. But I think Charlie Moore really proved a lot. Close second for me was Matt Rafferty at Hinsdale Central, a kid I saw a few times junior year, good player and everything, but I didn't really think the sun rose and set with him, but man, that changed this year. He was a complete force for Hinsdale Central, inside, outside, just a dominant player at times, so kind of those are my two.
Yeah, I mean, Rafferty had a great career as well, another guy who ended up the second all-time leading scorer at Hinsdale Central behind Brian Wardle, so definitely, you know, mine is... one that I usually kind of try to find that guy who rose the occasion as a senior and raised his level of play to the point where he became a bona fide no-brainer Division I prospect out of nowhere. I'm going with a high major kid who I just think really got better, and that's Glenn Watson of St. Joseph. Glenn Watson, there's not when you get that high level of a recruit, you usually don't see that type of progression as a senior. You know, they'll leave as a high school senior and then boy, then they get on campus, put in the time, the level of competition raises when they're playing on a college campus in the summer and the fall and a practice, and you see, wow, that's not even the same kid that I saw as a senior in high school. But Glenn Watson, particularly with his perimeter jumper, and anybody who watched him in Peoria saw it. Yes, it's been more efficient, more consistent, but from an evaluator perspective, if you saw his shot at the end of the year and watched him, even at the beginning of the year or last summer, Glenn Watson's mechanics, the way it came off his fingers and his hand, really is really much improved and much more fluid. The hitch is gone. Glenn Watson is my most improved player. I mean, he was always a playmaking point guard who could put pressure on opposing defenses with his change of pace and speed and an open court transition game, but Glenn Watson really improved as a both a mid-range jumper, which came along a little more quickly, but particularly his three-point shot. And Glenn Watson, you know, you talked about your MVP, Jordan Nash. You know, Glenn Watson is right there for me in that MVP discussion with all he brought to the table for St. Joe's and their state championship run.
All right, let's keep on rolling here. We have, what was the next? Oh, sorry. It was sixth man. This was a real easy answer for me. Josh Thomas from Simeon. Forget starter. He would have been the best player on an awful lot of teams in the state this year. He's just a complete spark off the bench for them. Ends up usually finishing most games because he's one of their best five, and Rob Smith wants him at the end. He's going to be a huge key piece to them next year to how far they go as well. He's a really strong, dynamic player.
I mean, I think he's an obvious choice, six-man award, and to avoid repeating, I'm going to go. There's two guys that jumped out. The guy I just talked about earlier, Jacob Keller of Fenwick, six-man for them, a 22-win team. He provided a lot of intangibles for them, did some of the dirty work for them, even played bigger than his size. He was really a key piece for them this year, and obviously is going to be a bigger role going forward. And then Jelani Sankey from Kenwood, three-point shooter, came off the bench, really provided some offense for that team. So those two guys that jumped out at me as guys that really made an impact off the bench for their respective teams.
Nice. Freshman of the year, for me it's Raekwon Drake from Orr. he was just sensational. You know, he's 6'5", 6'6", strong player, put up a low double-double at least. Almost every time I saw him this year was a big part of their success, and playing against such high-level competition, he was awesome. Also, not to take Joe's steam here, I'm not sure who he's picking, but Ayo Dosunmu from Westinghouse put up some incredible numbers. He's going to be a great player. Marquan Williams from Perspectives MSA, and of course, kind of Kizo Brown. Didn't get a ton of playing time to Simeon, you know, Phenom, but he's going to have a real great career.
I mean, I guess I go with the numbers. I mean, Ayo Dosunmu at Westinghouse, I mean, didn't he average over 20 a game?
Yeah, he did, but Marquan Williams did too.
Like 25,
yeah.
26.
Yeah, they were both,
you know,
crazy.
I mean, all these guys, I mean, Kizo, you know, Cameron, my mind just went blank.
Donnell Tattelon or something?
Oh, yeah, from West Aurora. Yeah. Came on at the end of the year for Coach Gordy Kirkman. This is a good-looking class, and I know we're at Chicago area, but there's really two sensational freshmen downstate that college coaches are after already at a high major level, getting them on campus already. Darius Bean at Carbondale and Tim Finke at Champaign Centennial. Bean's a 6'3 point guard, long, athletic, wiry. He's probably the top prospect in the class. And then Tim Finke's a 6'4, 6'5 wing, guard skills. He's the brother of Michael Finke, who's a freshman redshirting in Illinois right now. But those two guys, it's a good class. And there's going to be a lot more that blossom next year. Since we're talking about freshmen, Whitney Young's got some good freshmen. Chase Adams down at Mary Catholic. So it's a good looking class.
No doubt. All right, last part here, Coach of the Year. This is always a really tough one. I mean, there's so many coaches and so many that do a great job and so many unexpected things to see at the end of the year. And in the end, I looked at people with State Hardware and who's the team I was most shocked that had some, and it's pretty wild. I'm going Coach of the Year, Rob Brost, Bolingbrook. He did what nobody thought he could do.
I also taken a team that got some hardware, and it's Geneva. Geneva was, you know, they were expected to be good. They had a big name player, Nate Navigato, but Phil Ralston at Geneva. Again, I go back to this topic we talk so much about, and that is guard play. And you know, Pace Temple was injured, missed majority of the first half, or not, basically the whole half of the season. So we're still waiting for him to come back. They really didn't have any true guard ball handling guards, and for a team to get through the road to beat the teams they beat that had guards, like St. Charles East with Cole Gentry and Rockford Auburn with two Division I guards, and then get down to Peoria, I just think I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, because you don't get that far and win that many games in that way, but they really were able to hide some of their deficiencies and get past some of those in some high-stake games in March. And that's a credit to, you know, the style system, yes, but also the belief that they had. And a lot of that goes back to the head coach.
Definitely. All right, next question moving on here. This one pretty much to me. It says it's from an anonymous Fighting Saint student, but his name comes up on his email. Ryan Stackhouse. So sorry, Ryan. Maybe that's not your name. Mike, looking at your final Super 25 ranking, then he lists my 9 through 15, which, you know, I've got West Aurora 9, then RB, Thornwood, Hinsdale Central, Lake Park, Neuqua Valley, and then St. Charles East at number 15. Don't you feel that's a bit harsh on St. Charles East, with their only losses being very close to St. Joe's, Geneva, and St. Charles North? Some quality wins in a very tough Upstate 8 river, including Geneva, blah, blah, blah. On a side note, IHSA needs to ban geographic regionals. I think it's worth answering the specific rankings question, just to let everyone know that the rankings that I'm doing once the playoffs start, I think they're worthless. I mean, I wouldn't do them, except that they are a huge traffic thing, and people screamed, I think, one year we tried that a few years ago. So I keep doing them. But, I mean, there's a tournament going on, guys, that's telling you who the best teams are, and we're seeing bit by bit. So I kind of just rank them based on who's alive. And it doesn't do any reader much good for me to have a number two team that isn't playing anymore. You know, the whole point of the rankings is so that fans know who the best teams are, and if they're not playing anymore, who cares? You know, if I think they're better. And then at the end of the year, the final rankings, I'm basically just going off what happened in the tournament. And St. Charles East didn't win a regional. so they're not going to get ranked by me in the final rankings ahead of teams that played for sectional titles or went to state or won the super sectionals. In my mind, rankings are fun and really good throughout the year, but once the tournament starts, the tournament's what matters, and that's why St. Charles East is 15.
See, now I'll disagree. I'm putting it up, but just my final kind of power rankings, the top 25. And the only reason, only thing I disagree with is I get if you lose in a regional, but if you lose to a regional team that ended up third or fourth in the state, I think it's a little bit different than just losing a regular old regional championship game. So that's why, I mean, I just pulled up my power rankings that I'll just throw up. And I kind of write a little bit about each team, kind of recapping their season, which is more of the point of the reason I'm doing it. But I ended up putting St. Charles East 10. Couple of things. I mean, they pounded Riverside Brookfield in the regular season finale. They had a terrific season, obviously, and then lost to Geneva in a regional championship game. So, you know, that's just my only disagreement with it. But, the rankings, I mean, that's usually how when I put my rankings to the City Suburban Hoops Report, that's kind of how you do it. You kind of see their advancement. And I totally get it. But when they do lose a little bit early, like as an example, Mike, where'd you at St. Rita end up?
No, good question. I don't. Fairly high because they lost.
But it was like 7 or 8 or something.
I think.
So, like I will put them. I got them a lot higher just because they lost to Simeon and Simeon lost to Normal, which I just think. And then I go back to the eye test a little bit, where you know what. Despite these teams playing, advancing a little bit further along tournament trail, if they really played each other, who wins? Like, I'll ask you, if Bolingbrook plays St. Rita, who do you think wins?
Probably St. Rita.
Okay. That's just kind of my, I kind of think just that, and it's not to take away from any of those teams that get to stay or get deep in the state playoffs. It's just, it is what it is. There's some soft roads. And I know, they took care of business when they got to Peoria. We talked about this last week. I don't take as much stock in the third place games, but they did take Geneva to the woodshed and took care of them pretty good. So, but yeah, I mean, it's rankings are rankings. They're more for exactly what we're doing right now, which is debating. And that's kind of what I think other people do with them as well. And they argue, they fight, they debate, they analyze them, and that's really what they're really all they're worthless or worth what they're worth for.
Yeah, I mean, after this, I'm so sick all year long of who would beat who. I don't have to, the way I look at it, I don't got to think about that anymore. This tournament just happened. I don't have to think about if St. Rita would beat Bolingbrook. Tournament happened. Bolingbrook finished third.
Mm-hmm.
They win. But anyway, anybody can do it how they want. So I really don't care. It looks like I had St. Rita 7th. For whatever that's worth for you. And no, I don't think I don't think the IHSA needs to ban geographic regionals. I agree with the IHSA on the geographic representation at state. As someone who travels around the area watching teams, I don't pretend to know anything about the teams outside of our area. I think how awesome Normal and Belleville Altoff were should have shown that to a lot of people that they deserved, to be at state over what some reporters would have seeded or coaches from up here or whatever. St. Charles East, I loved you. I loved St. Charles North. You guys were super fun to watch play. But if you're not the best team within 2 miles of your school, you're not going far. And that's it.
But I agree with the geographic representation. But are you telling me they can't have those regionals play out a regular sectional and not put those teams together? There's no reason they should have St. Charles North, St. Charles East, Geneva, all of them in one regional.
You would have had two of them in, even if they seeded the four, because St. Charles North wouldn't have gotten the top four.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you play the 4 or 5 seed, but just play it out like the rest of the those. It's not that far away. I looked at the travel, and there's other sectionals that traveled as far, if not farther, than those teams would have had to travel with the Rockfords and the.
I think we're arguing. Yeah, I'm.
No, I know.
I'm fine with.
It's a different.
Yeah, I'm fine with taking the top four, and they host the regionals. That's cool. Or separating them, however you want to do it. But then you're still making it geographic.
No, it's geographic. I'm just saying you can't. This is a different argument. I just led into this. You can't have. a state tournament where everybody has playing by different rules.
And
that's what's happening. You're playing these sectionals by and large, the entire Chicago area one way, and then you've got this other one that's done completely different. And there's not – I'm tired of the – I understand you can't travel from Alton to Peoria, but – Well, you know what? I've had coaches say that they can. They're like, it's just one game, one weekday, you know, and I coaches hate it. They absolutely hate it. They want this thing to be played out like all the other sectionals, and especially that one with the, you know, I'd have to pull up all the teams in that sectional, but
there's
no reason why they can't that just like all the other
sectionals. I don't understand why there was so much outcry over that when that argument has been that way. You could have had this argument at any point since four classes. It's ridiculous that there are 21 team sectionals and then 16 team sectionals, that some teams have to play five games to win a sectional. I mean, that's hasn't been fair from the start. To me, that's not any different than the way they group these other ones over. And let me tell you, that 20th or 16th or 15th team is better than the 9th team in a lot of other sectionals. And they're getting penalized, but they literally have to play an entire other game. I mean, forget who you're playing or where you're playing, they have an extra game to play. I don't think it's fair that some schools have to play an extra game to win the state championship.
Wait a minute, who's playing an extra game? They're playing games on Monday?
Yeah.
Well, I really don't think they got a chance to win a state championship. I mean, third, but, the weak, poor teams that put themselves in that position.
Yeah, but that 17 team is better than the 9 team in a lot of sectionals. It's the big Chicago sectionals that get all that. I mean, if you don't think Lincoln Park could go down and beat who's your 9 seed in a 3A sectional, you're crazy.
That's just the least of my worries. I just think it's crazy.
I mean, this isn't the NCAA tournament. They weren't the last four in. We're talking about like 30 or 40 schools that have to do this.
We should have it. We should have just a selection show.
And
but I've had people talk about seeding, reseeding. After the sectionals, you can't do that. I mean, you just,
soccer.
One of the things you just said is nobody has a clue. Nobody, where would Normal have been seated going into the Super?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Or Bill Voltoff.
Actually, they probably would have played Simeon as the one versus eight. Yeah. I mean, they still would have played anyway. But Belleville, Altoff, same thing. When they don't play common opponents, it's impossible to figure out just how good they are.
No doubt. All right. Julian Kenner, former Whitney Young player who has asked a question before, has another one. All of my questions will be intended to be fun. It's Julian from Chicago again. Who is the best player you covered never to play high-level D1 basketball? This question sent Joe and I briefly on a mess of looking through old names because we know there's like tons of these guys and we couldn't think of them all. Sadly, my answer is just going to be Joliet.
No, there is several players from Joliet.
Morris Dunnigan, most recently. Anthony Shoemaker from not too long ago. And Marlon Johnson from not too long ago. The last three Joliet superstars have all failed to go on. I think Shoe might have a chance now. I think he might be trying. I think he's done with JUCO. And I think he's might wind up somewhere. Cross your fingers that we will get one of them.
Yeah, mine was really, really easy when I looked back at the beginning of the old City Suburban Hoops Report publication. Which started in the mid-90s, and probably the answer for a lot of people to this question would be Ronnie Fields. Obviously, he was a megastar. Everybody's heard about him. Everybody's seen those highlights and the numbers he put up. And, you know, some really bad things happened that prevented him from being able to play at a high level and or play college basketball at all. And Ronnie Fields from Farragut is... You know, a guy who, I don't know where he would rank, but he's probably one of the top 25, top 35 players in state history who didn't play college basketball. And, you know, we even talked about, Mike and I talked about when we were going over this, even players who just had a little bit of a taste of college basketball who were really good in high school. And there's a whole lot of them, too, whether it be like a Patrick Beverly from Marshall. Most recently, Jeremy Richmond from Waukegan, who played real briefly at Illinois. So, I mean, it's an interesting question because there actually are quite a few players who you just watched in high school and thought they were terrific high school players, entertaining, productive, maybe their teams even advanced deep, and everybody got a taste of them, and then poof, just like that, they just kind of went away.
Yeah, probably the other one. I think Julian Kenner probably played against him. John Taylor, who transferred from, I forget, some school in Indiana over to North Lawndale, was kind of a sensation for a while. He went to a junior college, then he was at Fresno Pacific, and apparently he's in the ABA now. He was really good and never played, apparently, a second of D1 basketball. So
there's a lot of them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's see here. I think we're getting close to the end here, these questions. Yeah, Jack Gleason, friend of the podcast. He's the guy who does the standings. He says, if it's not too late, what was the thing that surprised you the most this season? Joe and I did not prepare for this question, so it's going to be real quick reaction off the cuff. I'm stalling right now while I think.
I wasn't prepared either, but yeah. Honestly, something popped in my head immediately.
All right.
I'm surprised. I was surprised. This is going to be like, everybody's going to be like, Joe, come on. I was really surprised the public league had a major issue again at state tournament time. I would have just thought, you know what? After we went through what we went through last year, we're going to get some things right. We're not going to make headlines in a negative way. Everything is going to go according to plan. And that was a pretty big deal. I mean, you talk about teams playing an extra game or not having to play extra games. St. Joseph, if you look at what they did, they just barely got by that super sectional against St. Pat's by 1 point. I would have picked St. Joe's to beat North Lawndale. I think they would have beat them, but that's a dangerous North Lawndale team in a sectional final that St. Joe's just flat out didn't have to play. And to me, I just think it's surprising the public league had to go down that road once again after the debacle of Curie a year ago. And there were a few other teams that were knocked, you know, we just see this problem over scheduling and it's time that they get everything figured out and avoid these conflicts come state tournament time.
I guess I got to go with Providence. I mean, at this point, you really got to wonder about the Catholic League tournament. These teams keep winning it, and then the other teams go on for state dominance. It seems like not a lot of people have a very high priority. However, you can't deny the run Providence went on, the teams they beat were staggering. I mean, they beat, what, 4 great teams. So I'll give Providence the nod. Providence winning the Catholic League tournament was the most surprising thing of the season for me.
Man, Michael Bryan giving Providence his due is yeah. Like 1B biggest surprise. So that's good. They did it. It's a school that, you know, took off at the middle of the season and really put it together once Miles Boykin returned.
Yeah, also kind of secondary, Lake Park season. Great job. You know, I went to watch them. They were that thing everybody loves to talk about, you know, what makes the Main South great, or, you know, the way they play like that, and they took it really far with a whole lot of not super high-level talent. So impressive season for them all the way through. Nice run.
No, it was. I mean, some of it greater than its parts. You know, I just think that you go back to what high school basketball is about. And here is a senior-laden group without really a Division I prospect or player and put together that type of season. It's pretty impressive, and especially for a program that hasn't done it, you know, over history. What was your favorite moment? What was the best thing you covered all year? If you had to pick out one thing, like this was great to be at, to cover it.
I loved Jake Ludwig's game winner for St. Charles North over St. Charles East.
One more St. Charles reference.
Yeah, it was something else. Just the way he took it. He took it early. He had a few seconds left. He didn't quite get to the 3-point line. It was just like, guy gets the ball, takes a few dribbles, and is like, you know what? This game needs to end here now. And he launched that thing, and everybody went pretty nuts. I that was my favorite moment of the season. Well, what about you?
Probably the crowd and energy and electricity for Morton Riverside Brookfield in a neighborhood rivalry. That was. I've been trying to think of the best crowd that I've been a part of at a game, and I can't think of anyone better than that. I mean, they're. If I really, really thought maybe, but you know, the kids know each other so well in those two programs. They go to each other's like camps and they play different with each other. It was just, it had everything you would want in a high school basketball game. And that, I was talking to an official who was down in Peoria who did that game, the Morton RB game, the referee, and he just stumbled on that topic. And he's done a lot of big games, and he actually did the state championship game in 4A this year. And he said that that was the loudest he's ever been in a high school game. And he was trying to get referees' attention during the games, couldn't get them. He used the example of, you know, he during a timeout, he was trying to get attention. He had to actually throw the ball to his partner to get his attention. So that game and that electricity, that atmosphere was off the charts good.
Yeah, probably not a coincidence. We both picked neighborhood rivalry games where it was super fun high school basketball and not 2,000 people observing eight teams in a four-game shootout in some college arena. Gag me to death.
But, those are tough to watch. Yeah. You I don't know. I'm almost in favor of a shootout regulations of a maximum of three games, but I don't know. Yeah.
We will end, I guess, our first season of No Shot Clock on that note. Wonderful neighborhood high school basketball. Guys, we will be back at you, you know, maybe once a month or so periodically throughout the off season here. Not going to commit to anything just yet. We're not quite sure. If something happens, we'll probably come in. Maybe a little Marcus Levette decision, if he gives us any warning about that kind of stuff, we could do that. But we'll be in and out until the season starts back up again in November. We'll probably start up in October with some preview stuff. But thanks so much for listening this season. You've made this a real success, and it means a lot to both Joe and I, and we really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.